When Pharaoh heard the news that Joseph had been reunited with his long-lost family, he extended an official invitation to them to come and live in Egypt. They would be given the best of the land to live in and enjoy all of the good that Egypt had to offer. Pharaoh told them to not even worry about bringing their belongings with them because they would get all better stuff, new stuff, when they got to Egypt. Pharaoh gave Joseph's brothers carts and animals to carry their women and children and ample provisions for the journey and set them off. Now, before sending them off, Joseph, he gave gifts to each of his brothers and gifts for his father to take back to them. And he gave them some interesting parting instructions in verse 24 of Genesis 45. He said, "Do not quarrel on the way." Do not quarrel on the way. See, his brothers, they still want to blame each other for what's happened. They want to identify who among them was responsible and guilty for what and by how much. Who did Joseph blame and hold responsible for the awful stuff they did to him? Genesis 45:4, we read this a minute ago. It says, "So Joseph said to his brothers, 'Come near to me, please.' And they came near, and he said, 'I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me there. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are yet 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He's made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt.'" So Joseph told them to not be angry with themselves or with one another for what's happened. Don't blame yourselves for this. Joseph points out to them the larger story of God who's saved lives through this situation. Joseph points to the good that has come out of all of the terrible stuff that they did to him. Joseph doesn't blame them. He doesn't even ask for an apology from them. Joseph is asking them to do the same thing with and for each other. Don't blame one another. Don't try to figure out who was responsible for what among you in all of this. Let it go. Forgive each other. Don't quarrel with each other. Focus on the good that the Lord has brought out of this. You see, there are times when we need to forget about trying to affix blame and responsibility to people in our lives too and just extend forgiveness and move on. I mean, does it really matter who was at fault? Who was to blame? Will it make it better? Will it change it? Does it help us move past it and get on with our lives? Life is not ideal. We're all sinful people. We all fail one another again and again. So rather than keeping score on each other, we need to extend love and grace to each other and forgive and then move on. And this includes husbands and wives, children and parents, neighbors and friends and work associates. We need to forgive and move on. This is the first message that Joseph gives to his brothers as they leave Egypt to go get their father. And then verse 25, let's skip down to verse 25. "So they went up out of Egypt and came to the land of Canaan to their father Jacob. And they told him, 'Joseph is still alive and he is ruler over all the land of Egypt.' And his heart became numb, for he did not believe them." He probably wanted to slug them all. Like, that is not funny. "But when they told him all the words of Joseph, which he had said to them, and when he saw the wagons that Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of their father Jacob revived, and Israel," or Jacob, "said, 'It is enough. Joseph, my son, is still alive. I will go and see him before I die.'" It says the spirit of their father revived. The literal meaning is that his spirit came back to life. Jacob has been the walking dead for more than 20 years, languishing in his grief over the loss of Joseph. This is the first time there's been any sign of life in him since that time. The news of Joseph still being alive immediately breathes life into this old man. Verse 1. So Israel, or Jacob, took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. Over the last 9 chapters of Genesis, Genesis 37 up through 45, we've watched Jacob sink lower and lower in spirit. The loss of his son Joseph was a devastating blow for him. He slowly ebbs away and gives up on living for the next 22 years. He let his grief crush him and rob him of his will to live. But news of his son being alive has revived his spirit and renewed his strength. And now here in chapter 46, we see a man who has turned the corner and he's beginning to walk a life of faith again. We may not want our Bible heroes to act so frail and human-like, but that's what they are, frail and human. These are just folks like us. They experience discouragement and frustration and fear and depression just like we do. There are times in their lives when they are anything but a picture of faith and godliness. The amazing and reassuring truth that emerges here is not the faithfulness of Jacob or of Joseph, but the faithfulness of God to his people. See, God is faithful even when we are faithless. In Jacob's case, the Lord never left him. The Lord never went back on any of his promises to him. The Lord has always stood right beside Jacob with his ever watchful eye trained upon him, always. And the same is true for each of you. God is always faithful. He will never leave you. God's faithfulness to us isn't based on our faithfulness to him and our ability to cope with life. His faithfulness to us is not based on our faithfulness to him and our ability to cope with life. The incredible truth about the Lord is that he will carry us when we're too weak and damaged to go on walking, rather than dumping us for someone else with more faith and more willpower. Jacob has been carried by the Lord for 22 years. God's been carrying him this whole time. And he's now once again, now finally finding his legs again, putting weight on his feet again for the first time in all those years. It said Jacob came to Beersheba and he offered sacrifices to God. This is a beautiful and important picture that we have of Jacob here. This is his first significant act. After receiving news that his beloved son Joseph is still alive, he worships. That's the first thing he does. He worships. Jacob, he hasn't forgotten who he owes all good things to. He's not forgotten the one who made the promises to him first. His gratitude toward God has been covered over by his grief for a long time. But the cloud over his life is lifted and he worships. Verse 2. And God spoke to Israel in visions of the night. So here at Beersheba, where he's worshiping, God comes to him in a vision that night and he speaks to him and he says this to Jacob, "Jacob, Jacob." And he said, "Here I am." Then he said, "I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for there I will make you into a great nation. I myself will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also bring you up again, and Joseph's hand shall close your eyes." So the Lord makes several reassuring promises to Jacob here in this vision. The first is, he says, "Don't be afraid to go down to Egypt, for there I will make you into a great nation." God is telling Jacob here that even while living in the midst of this other nation of Egypt, the Lord will make Jacob's descendants into a great nation, as he promised them. Second thing, he says, "I myself will go down with you to Egypt." The Lord promises to be with him, even in Egypt. Jacob will not be alone. God will not be abandoning him there. And he says, I will also bring you up again. So the Lord reassures Jacob that his people will return to their own land of Canaan. Their stay in Egypt is temporary. In other words, God is telling him, I have not revoked my promise that I made to you. I am going to bring you back to the land I promised to give to you and your descendants. And then finally, he says this. He says, Joseph's hand shall close your eyes. This is one of the most comforting and tender things that the Lord could have said to Jacob in this moment. He tells him that his own beloved son Joseph will be with him when he dies. So after all of the grief that Jacob has suffered over the loss of his son Joseph, believing him to be dead for so long, and the sorrow over that loss being so devastating to him, to have the Lord tell him that Joseph's own hand is going to close his eyes, he's going to be at his bedside when he passes, it must have caused this old man's heart to almost explode with joy and worship. God is so good to Jacob, so gentle, so tender with him. We see God's personal fatherly love displayed to this man in this last promise. He cares for Jacob, the man, the individual. Jacob is not simply the conduit through which God is going to make this grand promise to his people. Jacob is a person, and the Lord treats him like a person. God is concerned about you too, as a person. Verse 5, it says, Then Jacob set out from Beersheba. The sons of Israel carried Jacob, their father, their little ones and their wives, in the wagons that Pharaoh had sent to carry him. They also took their livestock and their goods, which they had gained in the land of Canaan, and came into Egypt, Jacob and all his offspring with him, his sons and his sons' sons with him, his daughters and his sons' daughters, all his offspring he brought with him into Egypt. And then let's jump down to verse 28 of this chapter to finish our story out. Verse 28. He, Jacob, had sent Judah ahead of him to Joseph to show the way before him in Goshen, and they came into the land of Goshen. Then Joseph prepared his chariot and went out to meet Israel, Jacob, his father, in Goshen. He presented himself to him and fell on his neck and wept on his neck a good while. Israel, Jacob, said to Joseph, Now let me die, since I have seen your face and know that you are still alive. These two who loved one another so much are finally reunited after all these years, all this suffering. And then in verse 30, it says, Now that Jacob has seen with his own eyes that his beloved son Joseph is still alive, he says, Now I'm ready to die. Now this is what's interesting, is God is going to actually bless Jacob with 17 more years of life. He's going to live for 17 more years. And what's interesting about that is that Joseph, his son, was taken from him when he was 17 years old. And now the Lord gives him 17 more years with Joseph at the end of his life. Well, why? Why does he do that? Because the Lord's good to his people that way, that's why. He's just good to his people that way. He loves us. So finally, in closing, we've seen in the story of Jacob how the Lord remains faithful to a man who's broken and crushed by life. The Lord did not walk away from him in disgust because of his frailty. The Lord gently, with a father's strong hand, brought Jacob through it. And he'll bring you through whatever you're facing too.